Welcome to the Riverside Church Podcast. Riverside Church is a community of believers striving side by side for the gospel in the greater New Orleans area. For more information about Riverside Church, go to riversidelife.org.
Series. This is part four of our series through the book of Nehemiah. So far, we have witnessed some beautiful moments in the history of God's people, haven't we? We've seen a leader, Nehemiah, with the means and the influence to lead the restoration of God's people and God's city. He leaves the comfort of the palaces of Persia where he was serving as the cupbearer of the king. He returns to Jerusalem with a burden that the Lord had put on his heart to rebuild the walls of the city. And we see these beautiful scenes like in Nehemiah chapter 3 and chapter 4, where side by side, everyone is working together to see this become a reality. They overcome opposition from the outside. Remember, opposition was there in Ezra's day. Opposition was there again as they started. And even as they, with great resolve, continued to build, you know that the opposition just got more organized. The opposition from the outside got greater, but the Lord continued to prosper the work of his hands, and his hand was among them. We see that the wall is joined together all the way around the city, and it's about halfway to its final height. They're meeting more resistance, but you notice what the people of God do is they're living this, what you might call this wartime lifestyle. They continue to work day and night, not taking any breaks hardly from this building project of protecting the city of the Lord so that the people of God might worship as God designs. Because remember, this is more about just a physical city. This is about the people of God worshiping God. This is about building up to the time where Christ would come to this city, to this temple. So it is preparing the way for moments like that. So with this in mind, they develop this and take on this wartime lifestyle. They continue to work with a trowel in one hand and sword in others, day by day, night by night, singular in purpose, doing the work of the Lord. It's quite beautiful and a wonderful picture for the church today. As we do a kingdom building, as we build the temple one stone upon the other, reaching the world with the gospel of Jesus Christ. But as the story continues, as you may have heard as I read Nehemiah chapter, part of Nehemiah 5 this morning, we're hit with a bit of a plot twist, aren't we? That everything that was going so well and this opposition that they were facing from the outside is now getting real close to home. Did you read it in Nehemiah chapter 5? At least did you hear it? Look there. It says, now there was a great outcry of the people and of their wives against their Jewish brothers. There's an outcry. Now this word is important because this word is used several other times in the Old Testament. It's used in places like Sodom and Gomorrah. It's used in Exodus chapter 3 when the people cried out. There was a great outcry in Exodus chapter 3 against their unjust taskmasters. And so this clues us in a little bit that what's going on in Nehemiah chapter 5, there is some sort of sin, there is some sort of injustice that is calling for the people to cry out against. So, after some of these most glorious days of togetherness in the life of God's people, we have a dilemma on our hands. And that's what we're going to look at this morning, hopefully with the main point of maybe helping us understand how to deal with conflict. And maybe us give us an understand that how we relate to one another within the city, how we relate to others who are together working on the same project as we are, how we treat others tells us what we think about God. So let's make a run at it. The first thing that I want you to see in Nehemiah chapter 5, we need to understand the situation. That's the first thing we need to do. We need to understand the situation of what's going on. The outcry is against their brothers, and all of this is coming from within. So understand that this is internal conflict that's going on. As well as they have stood up against the opposition from the outside, the conflict is now within. J.I. Pachter says something like this. He says, Satan is a hater, a wrecker, a destroyer, and only when he is ruining God's work in individuals and communities is he happy. And that's absolutely what's going on here. Perhaps you could say, in understanding the situation, that what's happening for the leader Nehemiah, what's happening in that day, have you heard this term before? Nehemiah is losing the locker room. Have you heard that before? And maybe you heard it most recently. When I heard it was back in January. Maybe you remember this, that maybe some of you are in this camp, that you might not think too highly of the current Saints head coach because we're not doing what we used to do and whatever. But do you remember when we played the Falcons? I think it was back in January, I believe it was. I might have this wrong. And as you know, I mean, we own the Falcons. They don't have a shot. And we were beating them bad. Do you remember this? And they put Jameis Winston in. That's how you know we're winning pretty good. They put Jameis Winston in. And so he hands off to a running back. Do you remember this? On the goal line, when they should have been running out the clock. And they score another touchdown. And the head coach of the Falcons is furious. And do you remember what Dennis Allen, the head coach of the Saints, says? Yeah, I did not tell them to run that play. Like, I told them to kneel on the ball. That was not me. And so you know how the conversation went, is we need to get rid of him. Why? Because he has lost the locker room. And do you know what that means? That means internally, in the locker room, among God's, among the players, they're living however they want to live. They're calling whatever plays they want to call. They have lost respect for the leader. They've lost respect for the coach. They're going to lose respect for each other. And they've lost what's holding them together. So there's no hope of winning and doing what you need to do if you lost the locker room. And this is what's going on for Nehemiah, that this situation that's coming upon him is he's losing the locker room. Like, there's outcries, and it is within the walls of Jerusalem. And if he loses the locker room, what will ever become of God's people? Now, there are layers to this outcry. Yes, there's this threat here that he's going to lose the locker room, but there's layers to this threat. Maybe you heard in Nehemiah chapter 5, verses 1 through 5. Let me just kind of summarize it for you. There's several groups that are upset at this point. There's one group that are probably the poorest among them. They're not landowners, and they've been spending all of their time building this wall night and day. And they're saying things like, we need to get grain so we can eat and stay alive. Like, we've been working so much. They've maybe neglected some other things they should have been doing at this time, and they haven't earned a living by harvesting the field, and they can't find food, and they're going hungry, and there's no food to be had because we see that there's even famine in the land, so that they're hungry and worn out. So there's that group. There's also another group, as you read here, that has mortgaged their property. It says here that in verse 3 that there are those who are saying, we are mortgaging our fields and our vineyards and our houses to get grain because of the famine. So this would be your property owners. They had a little more means, but because of the work they were doing and because of the famine in their land, they have to draw money out of their property. So they're mortgaging their property. And it doesn't seem like there's going to be end to this. Like, it's just getting worse. They're going deeper and deeper, it appears, into debt at this point, and there's going to be no way out. And there's also these folks that are probably the most wealthy among them, that they have the king's tax that's coming down upon them. And there was those who said, we have borrowed money for the king's tax on our fields, so their fields are not producing, and now they have to pay taxes. And I don't know about you, but if you don't pay taxes, you're in a lot of trouble. So they need to find ways, and so they force their sons and daughters in this slavery type situation to go earn money to help pay these taxes. It's not a good day for the people of God. On multiple levels, they're losing the locker room. The poorest among them, the landowners, and even the greatest among them, the most wealthy among them, they are struggling. They have been mortgaged their properties. They've borrowed money. They've put their family into slavery. And so at the bottom of this, they're hurting financially. So that's the situation. And what's more, do you notice who's the cause of all this? They're Jewish brothers. Like the wealthiest among them are taking advantage of the situation, it appears. So that's the situation. It's not a good situation. You can see why he might lose the locker room at this point. Like, they're fighting with it. Like, it's going to get bad. Like, husbands are having to come home and tell their wives or what's going on. We can't feed the kids. And why are we keep doing this? It's a hard situation. Understand the strategy. We said it a second ago. So that's the situation. Understand the strategy of the evil one. Your enemy, the devil, the Bible says, prowls around like a roaring lion seeking for someone to devour. So resist him, standing firm in the faith. The devil's prowling. He's not happy unless he's destroying the work of God. And he's getting pretty close. Ephesians chapter 6, we prayed it a moment ago. Put on the whole armor of God so that he can stand against the schemes of the devil. For our struggles are not against flesh and blood, but against rulers, against authorities, against cosmic powers of this darkness, against evil spiritual forces in the heavens. So for this reason, we take on the full armor of God. This is huge for us to understand. If they understand the situation, if they understand the strategy of the evil one, perhaps they will stop fighting each other and start realizing that that battle that they're fighting against will cause them to battle together. But instead, they're starting to be divided. The situation is complicated. The strategy of the evil one is seeming like it's advancing. The third thing that I want us to see is not only hopefully we understand the situation of what's going on, understand the strategy of what's going on, but also understanding the frustration that these folks have. You could hear the frustration already that they're not able to eat and they're going further and further into debt. That is a reason to be frustrated. But we have to ask the question, is this outcry justified? Like, in other words, is just part of going through a famine, going through a difficult day? Is this just part of how it works? Is there anything sinful going on? Like we know they're mad at each other, right? We know that they're arguing with each other. We know that there's a great outcry going on. And even that word outcry gives a hint that, yeah, there is something sinful going on. But nevertheless, we have to ask the question, are they just mad at each other and frustrated? Is it just hot and miserable and hard work and it doesn't look like they thought it would look, and they're just frustrated because they're frustrated because it's hard and difficult? And they're going through a very dark day, you know, financially and physically and things like that. Or is there something sinful going on? Listen to Nehemiah's response so that we understand that this frustration is justified. Look what Nehemiah says in Nehemiah chapter 5, 6. Do you see it there? I was very angry when I heard their outcry and these words. Nehemiah was very angry in what he heard. Not only that they were divided, not only that the locker room was being lost, but he was angry because there was an outcry. There's some sort of injustice going on. So what is the injustice that's happening here? Is that the people of God, so understand why they are so frustrated. It's not just because it's a difficult situation and a difficult time in a difficult place. It's because there's actually sinful things that are going on here. They are using, here's some of the frustration, that the people of God, even the richest among them, are using their resources how they want. I can use my money how I want, to a degree. We're also called to be good stewards of our resources and use them in a way that is pleasing to the Lord. And they're not doing that. In fact, the law of the Lord made provisions for the poor. It even made provisions for a jubilee year where all debt would be set aside and people would return to their lands. And it has been clear in Nehemiah chapter 5 that they're not observing the law of the Lord. In fact, not only are they not observing the law of the Lord, but we understand here from this text that the people are beginning to exploit one another. It's a very difficult, financial situation, and there are people among them who are exploiting their brothers and sisters. They're taking advantage of the situation only to become more wealthy. And so we have to ask ourselves questions, things like, do you think beyond yourself when you think how you deal with your own money and resources and things like that? They're using resources how they want. And I think of the heart of it, another way we need to understand this frustration is not only are they using their resources how they want, they're using people how they want. They're treating each other as useful for their own gain rather than precious brothers and sisters. Like in these moments in Nehemiah chapter 3 and 4 where they're working together side by side for the sake of the kingdom, and now they are exploiting one another and using one another for their own personal gain. It's their own people who are taking advantage of them. Look at what the people of God are doing to one another. The ultimate point of all this is not getting the wall built, but the people inside the wall to look more like their Creator. They're using people how they want. So you can imagine the hurt and frustration. And maybe you've been there before, because after such beautiful time of togetherness and unity, they were hurting not because of the evil outside of the city, but because of the fellows within the city. And maybe you've felt that more than others. Maybe there's been a time in your life where you've trusted the people of God and you got burned. We even see this in churches today. I hope not ours, but I've certainly seen it before, that people networking to get ahead, using people to push their own agenda, to raise themselves up or to push their own career forward or own image forward. They use people for their own sake. And that causes a lot of hurt. And maybe that's where you are this morning. I don't know. But I know in the early church, the Lord took that very seriously. There were people like Ananias and Sapphira who the Lord took out because they were about to bring division and lying within the walls of the church. This eternal conflict needed to be silent, and the Spirit silenced it pretty quickly. So you understand the frustration. Maybe you felt that frustration before, or you've maybe been taken advantage of, or whatever that might be. So understand what's going on, understand the situation, we understand the strategy that the evil one is, the battle's not against flesh and blood. Maybe you understand the frustration now that they are rightly justified, they're just not going through a hard time, they're being taken advantage of and manipulated for someone else's gain. So understand the response. Here's Nehemiah. Nehemiah's angry, and we know he's justifiably angry. He's like Jesus at the temple. He's like Paul in 1 Corinthians and Galatia. He has a reason to be righteously angry at what's going on. Not just because he thinks he might lose the locker room or the wall won't be built and it'll look foolish, but because the glory of God is at stake. Nehemiah chapter 5, verse 6. I was very angry when I heard their outcry in these words, justifiably so, hopefully you see now. Understanding, here's Nehemiah's response. So I took counsel with myself, and I brought charges against the nobles and the officials, and I said to them, you are exacting interest each from his brother. And I held a great assembly against them and said to them, we, as far as we are able, have brought back our Jewish brothers who have been sold to the nations, but you even sell your brothers that they might be sold to us. And they were silent, and they could not find a word to say. Nehemiah, you're right. And so I said, Nehemiah did, the thing that you are doing is not good. Ought you not to walk in the fear of our God to prevent the taunts of the nations and our enemies? The glory of God's at stake. Moreover, I and my brothers and my servants are lending them money and grain. Let us abandon this exacting of interest and return to them this very day their fields, their vineyards, their olive orchards, and their houses, and the percentage of money, grain, wine, and oil that you have been exacting from them. So understand the response of Nehemiah. We already know that he's justified in his response. But notice what Nehemiah does first. I think this is the point that we skip the most when we deal with conflict or deal with people. Nehemiah stops and takes counsel with himself. Now, this doesn't mean that Nehemiah necessarily looked in the mirror and said, oh, wise Nehemiah, tell me what I should do. What is being pictured here is Nehemiah is stopping to think about it. Now, oftentimes in dealing with situations like this, we want to talk, be quick to speak and slow to listen. We're supposed to be quick to listen and slow to speak. A soft answer turns away wrath. Nehemiah stops to think. He says, I took counsel with myself. And this means that after this initial outrage, that perhaps he was getting control of himself. Have you ever been in a situation, maybe it's a righteous frustration that you don't get control of yourself, and so now you're answering a difficult situation with, and you're still hot about it. Have you been there before? Just me? Cool. It's awesome. Do I have biblical grounds for this? Or do I just not like this? We have to ask ourselves. Usually when I'm in situations like this, I stop and say, what is our goal? Are we going after the same thing? What do we agree upon? Find some common ground. How are we trying to accomplish this together? Solomon would go on to say, a soft answer turns away wrath. The tongue of the wise uses knowledge rightly, but the mouth of fool pours forth foolishness. Better is a dinner of herbs where love is than a fattened calf where hatred is. A wrathful man stirs up strife, but he who is slow to anger dispels contention. Nehemiah stops to think. He's not going to add fire to fire or fuel to the fire. He's going to stop and think about what's going on. Am I justified? What is the issue here? What really needs to be addressed in this situation? Do I just need to yell at him and say, guys, get it together? Or do I need something a little more precise to help them understand what's going on? Nehemiah stops to think, and then Nehemiah explains the situation clearly. So he understands what we've sought to understand. He understands clearly what's going on. He understands what's at stake. He understands all of these things at this point. He understands why they're frustrated. He stops to think about all of this, and Nehemiah clearly explains the issue. Here's the issue. The issue is not the famine or who owns this or some people don't have fields, some people do have fields, some people have this job or that job or the other job. The problem is how you're treating one another is you're charging interest and taking advantage of them. That's the problem. The problem is how you are dealing with God's people. He's saying you're selling your brothers and sisters. He says you're exacting interest from them at you shouldn't be. And at the end of this, do you see what he says? Here's the solution. Look at verse 9. So we see Nehemiah stops to think. Nehemiah explains the issue. He gets to the heart of it. And he says, here's the issue. Here's what you're doing. Here's the problem. Here's what you shouldn't be doing. Here's where this goes against the law of the Lord. And you notice what Nehemiah says after that. Ought you not to walk in the fear of the Lord? To prevent taunts from the nations and enemies. God's glory is at stake, so he takes action. He thinks about the situation. He clearly identifies the situation, explains the situation, and then he takes action. He holds the council with all these folks, and they have nothing to say. Look, Nehemiah, you are right. What we are doing is not fearing the Lord. You are right. And so he's clear with them and takes action. They need to stop selling one another, exploiting each other. They need to take personal responsibility for what they're doing. It appears Nehemiah does that. He says, moreover, I and my brothers and my servants are lending money and grain. That perhaps he was starting to get into this a little bit. Maybe thinking that this was the proper thing to do in the situation. I don't know. Maybe he started with a good heart, but it's starting to unravel on him. I'm not sure exactly what he's saying there, but he's saying that we're all guilty of this and we need to abandon it. And so they take action. And then the Bible says they do it. He says we need to give them their fields back, their vineyards back, their orchards back, their houses, a percentage of the money, everything back. And they said, look at verse 12. We will restore and require nothing from them. We will do as you say. They followed through with it. And I called the priest and made them swear to do as they had promised. And I shook out the fold, it's like a visual of this, of my garment, and said, so may God shake out every man from his house and from his labor who does not keep this promise, so he may be shaken out and emptied. And the assembly said, amen, let it be so. And he praised the Lord, and the people did as they had promised. The people did as they had promised. They did what they said they would do. So that is the situation. That is the frustration. That is the proper response to the situation. I want us to see a couple more things. I want us to see the solution. I mentioned it a second ago, but what is the solution to all this? I think it's found in verse 9. I underlined it in my Bible. Maybe you could in yours. The thing that you are doing is not good. So what brings about this response? What brings about this action? What brings about this follow through? What brings all of this about? What is the root of it? What is the foundation of it? Where do their hearts come from in all of this? Ought you not to walk in the fear of God to prevent the taunts of the nations and enemies? The solution was not to get rid of all the money. The solution and the problem was not the money. The solution and the problem was, the solution to the problem was fearing the Lord and the testimony of God among the nations. So this is not a matter of condemning the rich or elevating the poor, but a matter of the responsibilities we have to fear God and glorify Him in what He has given us. To fear the Lord. What's going to keep this locker room intact is if they all fear the Lord together. What's going to give a testimony of God among the nations in a way that will draw the nations in is that they fear the Lord together. And if we fear the Lord, we will realize that how we treat each other matters. That we need to treat each other well and have an opportunity to work with them. We need to strive side by side in the fear of the Lord. And that's what he's after. If we would fear the Lord, then how we treat each other would change, right? Like if we fear the Lord and we understand what God has done for us in Jesus Christ and the grace that's been poured out upon us and the things that even the things that we have are all gifts from his hands, whether we have plenty or we have little, it's all from the hands of the Lord. So we fear him and keep his commandments and glorify him when everything that he's given us. How do you think these people would have acted differently? So the solution is fearing the Lord and glorifying him and all that he has done for us and understanding that everything that we have comes from the Lord and stewarding it in that way. Now, Nehemiah closes out chapter 5, I think in a very helpful way that will help kind of push this home as we close. So we understand the situation that's going on. We understand at the end of the day a justified frustration and the strategy of the devil. That's what's going to silence that and help us to work through that so we don't lose the locker room, is that we all fear the Lord together. How we treat each other will tell us how we fear the Lord, right? Like how we understand how good and gracious and slow to anger and abounding in love and gracious and generous God is with us, so we will treat one another. This is how we have come to know love, as we have seen Christ, and so we also love our brothers and sisters. Nehemiah closes chapter 5 with just almost like a personal reflection. He goes on to explain of how he has lived as a servant leader. Look at verse 14. And Nehemiah goes on to say, moreover, from the time that I was appointed to be their governor in the land of Judah, so we're told here for the first time that apparently he had this appointed position as the governor of Judah. From the 20th year to the 32nd year of Artaxerxes, for about 12 years, neither I nor my brothers ate the food allowance of the governor. The former governors who were before me laid heavy burdens on the people and took from them their daily ration, 40 shekels of silver. Even their servants lorded it over the people, but I did not do so. Why? Because of the fear of God. That's why I make that point earlier from the beginning of the chapter. Nehemiah is telling the people how this has changed his heart, how this has changed his life in the fear of the Lord. is that though he could have taken advantage of all of the resources at his disposal as the governor of Judah, all the food, all the money, all the resources, everything that this daily ration of 40 shekels of silver, say that three times real quick, how he could have lorded it over the people. He said he did not do that, and so follow this servant leader, I think is what he's saying here, because I fear the Lord. This high position that I had, I look different than all other governors. And isn't that true for Christians, that no matter what position we may have, it looks different because you fear the Lord, or it should. Like the way you teach and the way you serve, the way you sell, the way you minister, whatever you do in your line of work, it's different because you fear the Lord. Should be. You might have said that as a servant leader. That's why look at what he says in verse 16. I persevered in the work on this wall, and we acquired no land, and all my servants were gathered there for the work. Moreover, there were at my table 150 men, Jews and officials, besides those who came to us from the nations that are around us. Now, what was prepared at my expense, so even at his expense, so he didn't lord it over them, and at his expense, each day was one ox, six choice sheep and birds, every 10 days, all kinds of wine in abundance. Yet for all of this, I did not demand the food allowance of the governor because the service was too heavy on this people. So remember for my good, oh my God, all that I've done for this people. I think it's significant there. Not only did this, Nehemiah is saying, I'm not asking you to do anything that I'm not willing to do. And so he says, here's what I've done. Look, remember that. He's not calling attention to himself to glorify himself. That's not what he's saying. I fear the Lord, and it changed how I lived. I didn't lord it over then, even at my expense. I helped feed people, and even when we couldn't afford to do it, I just didn't do it. Here's what's significant about all this, I believe, that I think will help us as we close out. And maybe you see the connections already. Nehemiah, this leader, this is one of the last pictures that we get. Chronologically, if you're working through your Bible chronologically, this is one of the last books before the 400 years of silence until we meet our Christ. And so here we get this beautiful picture of this servant leader who doesn't lord over the people, who though he has the position, though he has the wealth, though he has the right to take advantage of all of this, he lays it aside for the sake of his people. And though he could have taken advantage of the situation, taken advantage of people, he says, at my expense, here is what I did. He's willing to lay down his life at his own expense for the sake of the people. Does that sound familiar? Does that sound familiar? Do you know one who was better than that? Who had all the treasure of heaven at his expense and laid down his life for the sake of his people? I think this tells us a lot about what we are looking for as our example and our power. And about how we treat other people is determined about what we think about God. How we treat other people and live our lives will be determined of how we see our Christ. 1 John 3:16 says, this is how we have come to know love. He laid down his life for us. And we should also lay down our lives for our brothers and sisters. If you don't want to lose the locker room, then lay down your life for your brothers and sisters at your own expense, not lording it over them. For this is what Christ has done for you. And that if Jesus is God and he died for me and he has, no sacrifice is too great for me to make for him. And how we treat others will tell people about how we understand Jesus. Even Paul would say, welcome one another how as Christ has welcomed you. And if we understand how Jesus treats us, then we will treat others the same. We will go low. We will go humbly. We will lay aside power and rights and resources for the good of others. And we will know that love covers a multitude of sins. And so as we close out, I think we get a lot of examples here of leadership from Nehemiah. I think we get a lot of examples of how to deal with frustrating situations when you're losing the locker room and things like that. I think all of that is helpful for us today. But I think at the end of this, if we miss what this is pointing to, if we miss that this finds its ultimate fulfillment in Christ, who at his own expense loved us and served us for the sake to bring us together for unity so that we can do kingdom building and see his glory fill the earth, then we will miss it all and we will not have the power to do this. Christ is our example, and the power of Christ in us is our hope of glory. And so how do you see your Christ? Nehemiah, in the end of chapter 5, says, here's what I have done. Live like this for the sake of the glory of God. We have something truer and better. We look to our Christ and say, this is how I want to love and serve my brothers and sisters. Not exploiting them and taking advantage of them, but loving them as Christ has loved me for the sake of the glory of God. Let's go ahead and pray.